Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
It's Halloween, Dan.
Spooky.
Actually, it's not literal. Well, I don't know when you guys are listening to this, but
it might be Halloween.
It's our October finale, in which we have watched The Watchers.
Who watches The Watchers?
That's right. Someone's got to. We did it. We've watched the movie The Watchers, and we're going to talk about it.
Yep.
But first, we're going to talk and get warmed up by talking some creepypastas.
That's right. I sent Luke some creepypastas this week.
Yes. Which will... it's too late. Well, we will have posted these on the Discord as well. How about that?
Yes.
And so pause this and go take a look at them on the Discord, or skip this and come back to it. Or if you don't want to just hear us talk about it, that's fine too.
Yes. I will say some of these are longer than others. So some of them are like 2-minute reads. A couple of them are like an hour. One of them is like a few hours. So I don't expect Luke to have gone through the entirety of one of these, but he may have.
Let's
get started.
Okay, we're in it for now.
We're in it for sure. Let's just go through ranking the ones that we've read. When we get to the ones that are longer, you can tell me how much you've read of it.
Okay.
We've
read four of them, correct? Or five?
I have five. I sent you five, and I don't know if you read all five, but I sent you five. Let's start with the Goatman story.
Okay.
This one is classic creepypasta. And I think, Luke, are you familiar with the S through F tier list?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
So S is the top, and then A, B, C, D, F, like school grades.
And it's not in relation to each other. It's an absolute scale.
This is an absolute scale, correct.
I'm gonna put Goatman at either, I'm trying to decide between A or B.
Yeah. Okay.
I might go A.
So Goatman was like one of the first creepypastas I think I'd ever read. And I think it holds up pretty well, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to put it low A, high B. So let's say like A. I'll give it an A.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think we're both in the A range.
It's scary. So it hits at something that is very like out in the woods camping by yourselves that really is great for me. I think the writing at the end gets a little bit difficult to follow. Like, I feel like the way that they introduce stuff at the very end is like where they talk about an event happening. I don't know. It's just weird order. Like chronologically, the order gets weird. But other than that, you know, scary, good stuff.
I think we've jumped into this a little bit too quickly.
Okay, yeah.
Because I want us to define creepypasta.
Okay, good.
Because I feel like you might have a better grasp on this than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is like a genre more so. Like I realize that it's kind of a format as well, and that it's like an internet story written by a random person.
The genre, the stylistic elements of this writing, usually there's a lot of internet speak to it. It's very casual writing. It's always most of the time it's in first person. Like it's a story of the person that was there, or
it's like as if the person was telling you a story.
Correct. Yes.
Like that happened to them
or
like,
somebody they know.
Yeah.
Yes. Usually there's just like, there's like fantastical elements or like mystical elements. And it's supposed to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I think about it, Luke, is, it's an internet scary stories to tell in the dark. You remember those books?
Yes. Yes.
It reminds me a lot of those kind of stories.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't really read that many of them. So like you're kind of the expert here, I think. I was like loosely aware of them before you sent me these. And maybe had read a few in my day. I feel like these peaked in what, like early 20 teens or something?
Around then, yeah. They're still writing them. Like there are new creepypastas that come out, which I think is crazy. because it feels so like it's sort of a joke at this point. Like it's sort of parody now.
But this is like, I imagine this, again, this is going to be just like, because of the age that we are and when we grew up. But to me, the peak of internet culture is always like 2012, 2014, maybe.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
And I think that these are right in that window, basically, right?
They are. Yeah. They are for sure. And I do think there is something really great and really wonderful about creepypastas that I love about that like internet time, which is like people were clearly trying something. People were clearly like doing some creative writing and trying to tell a story.
Yeah.
And I think it's really great. Honestly, I love the idea of a creepypasta because there, I will say there are so many bad ones out there. There are so many just horrifically bad ones. But there are also so many that are just like really good, like surprisingly good writing for somebody who's just like on the internet trying to scare you.
And so I feel like there were a lot of things that were kind of like this. And I'm sure they're still around.
Yeah.
But like people kind of just writing stories. Yeah. Like, do you remember, I think I got weirdly into, around this time period, the Humanity Fuck Yeah stories.
Oh yeah. 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 I remember you were talking, those are the alien ones, right?
Yeah.
I remember we talked, I don't know if we talked on the pod about this, but I remember that, yeah, you were sending me some alien, like where the humans are like dominant and the aliens are like scared of us. Right.
A lot of times they're like stories of why humanity is cool, which I'm sure if I like read them now, they'd be super cringe or something.
Well, maybe.
But it kind of reminds me of creepypasta, just a different genre.
Yeah.
Again, same format.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, at some point we'll have to do some Humanity Fuck Yeah tier list.
Yeah.
We'll have to do a Humanity Fuck Yeah tier list.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. But that's the background. So we've talked, Goatman, was that what it was called?
Yeah, Goatman, we're giving low A, high B, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Let's go on to the next one, which is another classic, the Russian sleep experiment.
Yeah.
Very different vibes on this one.
Very different. I put this lower, actually.
Okay.
I might give it like a low B, maybe into a high C.
This is giving C for me. And I remember this when I first read it as being like it's very edgy writing because it's just gross. Like it's really body horror.
Yeah.
Pretty gross stuff. And it feels like the author is just trying to be as gross as possible. It just feels like they're like, what's icky? How can we make this as icky as possible?
Right.
And I do like the tone of it. Kind of like, I like the tone where it's like an experiment gone wrong. And it's like sort of supernatural. I feel like the author could have leaned into that a little bit more. And there's a whole website called, SCP Foundation, which is like written from the perspective of like a government organization. And so you read all these like sort of scary stories that are like government reports. So the like style is very interesting. And I feel like this author could have leaned into stylistic choices a little bit more with something like this, especially if it's like a Russian scientist research experiment.
Sure.
Like they could have leaned into how that would actually be written about.
Yeah.
And I think that could have elevated it a little bit because right now it's just like the author describing a really gross thing.
Yeah, I agree. And this is like one of the, I think you said this, but this is like one of the most classics.
Yeah,
right.
If you've
Which
heard
I'm a little
of creepypastas,
bit,
you would know
yeah.
this one.
Which I'm a little bit surprised by because I didn't think it was that great. Yeah. I also felt like it was a little cheesy, like the kind of message at the end that's basically like the part of the human brain that you try to suppress or something like that. I didn't really love that. I would have liked going in a different direction. So I don't know. I think I'm probably going C on this.
Continuing on in the sort of like horror body mutilation category, we've got Gateway of the Mind.
This is the shortest one.
And it's sort of like Russian Sleep Experiment in that like they're performing an experiment on a person.
And it's they've basically taken away all his senses. And
yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say C as well.
Interesting. Do you want to say why?
This one just felt to me, this one was like the most forgettable.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it was the shortest as well. And I just kind of like blitzed through it because of that or something, but, I don't know. It just like, it was less, it was not that interesting.
I gave this a D. This is a D for me because the ending is also really boring. Like it doesn't have a, it feels like it's building to some big thing at the end because this guy is supposedly communing with God. But then the end is just like what a edgy atheist would say at Christmas to their parents. And I'm like, whatever. Okay.
I think, okay, this is good because I realize that I'm being probably too generous with my grades because I also think this is probably a D, realistically.
It's too short to provide any really interesting stuff. At least the sleep experiment one, there was like a few layers to it of like what was going on. This one was just like, I don't know, just not. There wasn't enough there to be interesting. So yeah, I put this in D tier. And then Luke, we get to a couple of longer ones here that I sent you.
Yeah. So, okay. So the next one is, do you have the name of it?
This one is Ben Drowned. And this is another like really iconic creepypasta. This is like one of the longer ones that people would know about. Which it's to give a little bit of a summary about it because it is a little bit longer. It's sort of like a haunted video game cartridge.
Yeah.
And it's about the video game Majora's Mask on the Nintendo 64. Luke, have you played that game before?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I'm worried about this because if you haven't played the game, like it can make some sense, but I feel like it makes a lot less sense if you've never played the game before.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate because it's going to affect the grade that I give it.
Fair enough.
Well, did you have more to the summary?
That was just what I wanted to say for like what this is. It's a longer one. They have, fortunately, the website that we use that we're going to post has like time estimates for how long it'll take you to read most of these things. And this one is like on the 45 minute mark, where the other ones were like 10 minutes ish or less.
And for me, because I didn't know the video game.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it if you don't know the video game, it's just kind of nonsense.
Right.
Right. Because it's like describing very in detail things that I don't know.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of those times I skimmed. So for me, it was a quicker read. But I'm sure I missed a lot because of that. Now that being said, I recognize that like the format was probably really cool. And again, we're reading this after the fact, right? Whereas I think, when this came out, it was like a drip kind of, came out over the course of like a few days. Right. And it was like almost like a reader participation thing.
Yes. There were also, like YouTube videos that came out with this. So this came out in 2017. It looks like,
based on
this website, but it also, that may have been when it was posted to the website.
Okay. So I think that this one was probably really good if I knew the game better.
That's right, Luke. Just give it what you got.
So I'm going to say like low B for me, on the assumption that it would be higher if I knew the game.
Yeah, I would give this an A for me. This is like around the same level as the Goatman story, because I think there is something really interesting about a haunted video game. I think the ending gets a little bit weaker as you go along. And I think this is something that we're going to find with a lot of these, that the longer ones, they start off really strong, but they don't always end very strong. And this is something that an author I really like, and I'm sure a lot of y'all have heard about, Stephen King, really struggles with a lot in his stories as well. And I think it's just a really challenging part of the genre, of like the horror genre, is like a satisfying ending, like a good ending. But yeah, I thought that the like descriptions of the game mechanics were really good. And like Majora's Mask is a scary game. Like I remember as a kid playing it and being like, this isn't the normal like Link game that I've played. Like this is really scary. Like the moon is gonna kill me and it has a scary face, and like it's a very scary game, and I think it lends itself really well to this kind of a tale. So yeah, I think this gets an A me at least.
Because I can definitely see it. Like, again, it is very important to know the game to, I think, appreciate this story.
Yeah.
But because it's very creative, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, the author also included some like video game, like videos, like as if they had taken a video of them playing this haunted video game. And they're very good. Like they add to it. They make it seem like it's very real, because they're like, he's like talking about something that happened in the game and then posting a video of it happening. And it's like, oh wow, this must have happened to them in the game. So I really like it. It's a high effort post. I enjoy it. I put it in A. And then there's the last one, Luke. And the last one is considerably longer.
Yes. So it's a Reddit post.
Yeah. So this is in the No Sleep subreddit, but I put those in the same category as Creepypasta.
Yeah. And it's, but there's multiple parts to it.
Yes.
And I will say I have not finished it. I read through part three, I think.
Okay, cool. The post is called, has anyone heard of the left/right game?
Yeah,
and it's in the No Sleep subreddit.
And so, what is there, like 7 or 8 parts or something?
I think there's like 8 parts, and the premise is that this person joins a group of people that are doing this like what's called the left-right game, where you get in your car and you go left and then right and then left and then right at every available opportunity, and if you do that enough times, things get weird.
Yeah. So far, I'm really into this, actually.
Yeah. So from what you've read, right? Because there's
what I've read, which again, I'm through part three of it. So I haven't gotten into the later ones that you're referencing that maybe get worse. But so far, I'm really into it.
Yeah.
I might put this honestly as my favorite of this so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
Luke, the question is, does this get S or A tier?
I know. I'm trying to decide. I'm going to say, okay, just through part three, I'm going to give it S tier.
Yeah, yeah. Only through what you've read, Luke. Only through what you've read.
I'm not sure if it'll get worse later on, but this is one where after we record, I might like keep reading.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to give it S for now. What do you think?
I didn't read through this whole thing again recently, but I read it for the first time, or I read the whole thing like a couple of years ago. And I reread like the first few parts again for this episode. I would absolutely put this in S tier if it weren't for what I know happens near the end. And it's not even that bad. Like, the I don't think the ending is like atrociously bad. So I would put this at the top of A tier or the bottom of S tier. And only the only reason I'm lowering its ranking is because I remember the ending as being sort of disappointing.
Okay.
But that being said, for the amount of enjoyment that I got out of it, the ending is relatively short. So, like,
okay,
I was really digging this. And I think this hits all the things that I'm looking for in a creepypasta, where it's like a mundane sort of a thing, but there's a lot of weirdness to it that you don't understand. And it's just like really strange. Like, it hits the strange button so good.
Yeah, so far it's been very strange, with maybe more strange than scary, which I guess is what creepy bit kind of means. But yeah, I'm really into it, and more of like, this is like kind of like almost a normal scenario.
Yes. Even like something you could get into accidentally. Like, you could catch yourself being like, oh, did I turn? Have I only been doing right and left? And it, like, I don't know. It feels like it could put you in a particular position. I also think, do they say, I can't remember if it's actually in the story or if it was somebody commenting, that there's like somewhere in Arizona that this like is either happening or would make sense to happen. Is it explicitly in the story?
No, it's in the story. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, this takes place in Phoenix. He starts from Phoenix.
That's what it was. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because Phoenix is a grid, Tucson is also a grid, by the way. And you can, and because like part of it is you can't, in a lot of cities, you end up in a dead end, right?
Yes. Yes. That's right. That's right.
So yeah, very near and dear to my heart right now, actually.
Careful.
I can maybe I'll do this.
Don't let him in. Don't let him in the car.
So yeah. This one's my favorite so far. Do you get like actually creeped out and scared by any of these? I feel like I maybe do for the goat man one.
I think the goat man one would actually creep me out if I was out in the woods and somebody had told that to me. Oh, if I was on the woods,
I'd be like, please don't tell me this story.
Yes. But like reading it in my house, I'm like, no, nothing at all is getting me.
So I agree with you in general. And then I got up and walked around my apartment, which so I'm moving and I recently got rid, like all of my furniture is currently not in my apartment. As you might be able to tell, my voice might be a little bit echoey. And so there's echoes in my apartment right now. So I was like, oh, no. I read these and I went and like did something and I like, I don't know why, but echoes are really creepy. And like I set down like a plate or something and it echoed and I was like, oh, okay, now I'm scared. And I know that makes no sense.
I love it.
But that caught me out a little bit before we started recording.
Yeah. Oh man, I love that. Well, Luke, don't get too scared. Because we gotta talk about this movie we watched.
We do. Okay. That's it for the creepypastas. Give us your tier list on the Discord. But let's talk The Watchers, the movie. I've got like a decent amount of small notes on this.
Yeah,
one,
I've got a actually. Couple of big ones here. So there's some changes from the book that we should talk about briefly. Yeah. So the movie follows a lot of the same basic, you know, points of the book. The actual like room that they're in is a little bit different. It doesn't have the signs of damage that the one in the book does. And there seems to be more of a magical element at work in the forest. Like, it seems like,
yeah,
like
it like draws them in.
Yes.
It gets rid of her car.
Yes.
And like makes them get lost easier.
Mm-hmm. And our main character Mina does a little bit more like exploration of the holes in the movie, which we'll get to in a little bit. And then also the Watchers are explained a little bit differently in the movie. So in the movie, there's a little bit more backstory about what the Watchers are and what Madeline is. And that they're like, it tells the history of what was going on with the fairies and the humans and explains why Madeline can walk around in the daytime. And that's all I want to say about the general like summary and differences, because we should, I do want to talk about the differences at some point, but I think we should kind of go more chronologically through the story first. First, I don't think the bird should have had a name. I think the bird was better without a name.
You were the one that critiqued her for not giving the bird a name.
Yeah, and then you know what happened? She named the bird, and the bird never showed up until like the very end of the fucking movie.
Yeah, the bird's role was minimized for sure. Which is fine. Again, like I think that I came into this thinking that the amount of time of a movie would be well suited for this.
Yeah.
And even as I was watching it, I was like, this actually is like a little bit short even now.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's hard. It's hard to make a movie out of a book, I'm realizing.
It is. It really is.
Especially to introduce like a whole premise, I think.
I think so too. Although I will say, I think they could have used some like montage scenes in here because... Did you get the sense that they were there for like 4 days after she showed up?
Yeah, it was quick.
They left?
Yeah.
And especially considering like when they finally escaped and they're on the bus. I remember the scene in the book was like, these people have been surrounded by this ominous forest for months. Mina included.
And in some cases, years. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they're on the bus and they're like having an internal crisis as they're like trying to be normal sitting with people. Meanwhile, Mina's like, hey, can you turn the radio up, buddy? And they're just like chilling on the bus. And I'm like, this doesn't really hit nearly as hard as it does in the book when they've been there for like months and months and they look all worn out and decrepit. And
yeah, I think they didn't use enough tools to make the passage of time feel significant.
Yeah.
And like, well, I think probably the best one would be like a montage or something, but just like it didn't, we're getting into kind of big picture stuff very early, but it didn't feel, it felt more like a very, like the Watchers themselves were scary.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like a huge ordeal that like, they spent a lot of time dealing with. It was more like this was like a bad weekend.
Kind of. Right. This was more Jurassic Park than it was like The Revenant or whatever, or some like survival situation. And I think the other thing about this, which was really frustrating to me, is like you didn't even need to spend that much time doing a montage, but just make them look gross. No, yeah. They all looked like they didn't showered. Make them look
that dirty. And like until the very end when she takes a shower and there's a lot of dirt coming off her is like really the only nod to them being gross. But like when they get on the bus, for example, like in the book, the bus driver is like, you guys look like you've been through some shit.
Yeah.
And like everyone else is like edging away from them. Whereas when they get on it in the movie, it's like, oh, these are kind of normal hitchhikers.
Right.
That's what they look like.
It just... Like, their clothing was in fairly good repair. They did not go through an ordeal in the movie. And I don't care how much dirt comes off her in the shower scene. That was not on her before she got in the shower scene. So, like, it doesn't matter.
And Mina looks identical in the movie from the beginning to the end.
Correct. Like, yes.
She's not, like, sunken cheeks or anything weird like that.
Right. And Madeline... looks like a perfectly healthy 70-year-old woman through the whole movie.
Madeline,
make her look gross.
Can we talk about Madeline for second? We're gonna jump around on my notes because I don't know, but I don't know how to define this. But the casting choice for Madeline, I didn't like.
No, and I didn't either.
And I don't really know why. Like, I feel like she almost looks too witchy or magical in some sense. Does this make sense? Like, maybe it's... Okay, so her hair was really white, which is fine.
Yeah.
And normal.
Yeah.
But she was, like, weirdly tan.
Yes.
To the point where it, like, made it look supernatural.
Interesting.
In some sense to me. I think that was what threw me off. And also, I mean, she also just kind of didn't really look like how I pictured her in my head, which is...
Well, yeah. Yeah. And we should say...
probably happens a lot, but...
The transformation magic that the fairies do in the movie is a lot more, like, realistic than in the book. So what I mean by that is they're able to, like, exactly duplicate people in the movie, whereas in the book there was some telltale signs, partly one of them being the stink, which we did talk about as Madeline not having, but also Madeline was like had sort of elongated features.
But I wanted Madeline in the movie to be like really tall, really skinny.
Yes.
And have like a severe ponytail or something.
Yes. Yes. I agree. I wanted her to look weirder. I wanted her to look like a really weird person. Not like she looks like a sort of a main character in a movie. She looks like the wise guardian witch who our protagonist calls upon to help them learn spells or whatever.
Very much so. Yes.
And that's not it. Madeline is like, Madeline threatens to like leave them behind and is like always on the verge of leaving them out to die in the book. Also, okay. We are jumping here to the end. Why couldn't Madeline leave the forest? Do we know this? Did she explain why she couldn't just dip at any point?
In the book or in the movie?
In the movie.
No, I guess not. I don't think so.
The only thing I can think of is that she was trying to practice with these people. Like, she was one of the Watchers in a way, and she wanted to get better at mimicking them. But otherwise, like, it didn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense. I mean, the book didn't also make sense in this regard, but the movie didn't try and remedy it really at all, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, we've done a lot of negative things.
Yes.
To jump. Let me... very small thing. This is my first note.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly small. Love her car.
Ooh.
Did you see it?
The blue?
Did you know the blue
Jeepy looking thing?
Like, I kind of hate American cars because they're huge. Mm-hmm. And her little... It was like a little Jeep, but it was like... To be clear, I don't know if it was the brand Jeep, but it like looked like a Jeep, but small. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want one of those. It looks great.
Luke wants a European car.
I want a European car. Give me one of those little guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I also liked it, although I do wonder if Amina, at the level of poverty that she exists at in the book, would have a car that big, or if she would have a much smaller car.
Mm-hmm.
Because that car was kind of big. That definitely isn't getting good gas mileage, I'll say that.
No, certainly not. Here's a little change that they did, which was to make her work at a pet store.
Yes.
She's not an artist, although she does still draw kind of in the movie, but it's not really a part of like a significant portion of the story. I kind of missed her like faces thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the change to make her work at it. I think it, her working at a pet store and having to transport the parrot, I think makes the like origin a little bit smoother.
I think it also, well, okay. I'll get to this point at the end because I do want to talk about this movie as like a film rather than like a book, like the concepts and the themes and stuff. But before we get there, another thing that they changed, Luke, which I don't know if you picked up on, but she's a vapor.
Yes.
Big vapor energy. But then
she smokes cigarettes that she rolls herself in the book.
Yes.
So there's some consistency there, but
in the movie, she's a big vape. big vape head. Luke, at one point she goes down into one of these holes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, ah, it's so dark in here. I wish I had some light to illuminate this thing. And pulls out, a lighter. Sorry, why does she have a lighter? She's a vapor. I don't carry a lighter around with me anywhere. Why would I?
I didn't know this, but
what am I lighting on fire? Nothing when I vape.
This is true.
And now, I do think... this is something that I wonder if it's like the rating system. Like if she had smoked cigarettes, if the film would have gotten a more adult rating. Because it's like, well, we can't have her smoking a cig because that looks too cool.
I can't be, because like I feel like it would already be... With the horror stuff, it would already be high enough.
So this was PG-13.
Okay. Yeah, you can smoke in PG-13. You think smoking brings it up to R? No way.
Well, I mean, it is 2025, Luke.
Maybe, be insane. I haven't kept up with this kind of thing, but that sounds insane to me.
Maybe they're like, vaping is okay nowadays.
I don't know. Ridiculous. Vaping. Anyway. A great way to show that she's a huge loser, though.
I agree. Yeah, very good. But anyway, I don't know why she has a lighter. She vapes. She's big vapor. She's blowing fat clouds. And her vape definitely doesn't work anymore in the forest, which I think she should have had a little moment of like, where's my vape? I got to get my vape. Do you guys have any batteries for my vape?
That's true. It's a good point. I hadn't thought about it. This is kind of tying into... the like passage of time thing, but in more of a micro way. So when she gets into the forest, and when she gets into the house, actually,
yeah,
the like when she gets introduced was to me done very weird. Like I'm gonna say poorly. It was like super quick, and like the acting was not great, and it was just like, it just felt so unnatural.
I agree with you. Yes. It felt like they were all very cool with her very quickly. And
they didn't treat her like this kind of might turn into a larger point for a second. That's a little bit more positive. Which is the characters that she's with. Mostly Sierra, who the movie calls Kiara, which I hate.
Yes.
It's Sierra.
Well, but that might be the Irish way of pronouncing it.
False and incorrect.
Okay.
And Daniel.
Yes.
Who Daniel especially is like super creepy.
Yeah.
In a not in a little boy creepy way, but no. In like a scary movie, he's
correct.
A creepy character.
He is a creepy kind of character. Way. Yeah.
Which I think might have been good. I think for a film separating it from the book, I think it was good. But it made their interactions a lot less natural to me. And I think that first comes off when she gets introduced to them. And it was like, oh, this is a weird, like these people are weird.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think speaking of the change of setting too, when she like gets into this place and it's just like a single room. I think that was like a really smart change for the movie.
Yeah.
Because I think it ties in really well to like what a movie, the themes that a movie can mess with and explore, because it puts them like literally inside of a screen. Like it puts these actors inside of a screen with an audience watching them. And there's also the level of like, she's watching reality TV on a TV inside the TV that they're in. And I think her working at a pet store is also an interesting thematic choice, because like we're watching these creatures inside of glass, like at the pet store too. And like, there's a lot of levels there which you can work with in terms of like audience and performer, that I think really lend themselves to being like effective as a movie, because we are also playing the part of like audience in a movie. So it like can really point to us as we're watching the movie at the same time in interesting ways. I'm saying can a lot. I don't think that the movie did this super effectively. Like, I think that there is a lot of possible, like there was a lot of fertile ground here, and I don't think that the seeds were tended very well for this, or at least they were just like the most obvious surface level themes that were being brought out in this.
Sure.
Because like, I don't know, there's a lot about like watching and performing and all this stuff. And they're literally behind a big screen in one room as they're like being watched and observed and mimicked. And, I don't know, I just wish there'd been a little bit more sort of in-depth, real study about audience and actor.
Do you have an idea of what that may have looked like?
I mean, so it puts, so one of the questions you could ask is like, what does it mean for an audience to mimic things people do in a movie? And like, these watchers are watching them to like do as they do. And what does that mean for like audience members watching movies, trying to be like actors and actresses in the film? Like, how much are we like the watchers in that we are like either dangerous to the performers on screen in some way, or like sort of acting out something unnatural for us because we see it on a screen? Like, how much are we held captive by these images on a screen and not able to look away? Like, they say the watchers are like drawn to it and they can't help it. I think there's a lot of questions you could ask here. There's also components of like fame and like literally ravenous fans killing performers. Like, I think that there is a lot here that could investigated, and it was like, almost doing it sort of, but not in any like meaningful deeper way.
The one I keep thinking about is like how like actors in a movie can define for us what like cool is or something like that, and then we try to act that way. Yes, there I see your point.
And even like a reality TV show, like even to make that connection, like how people in a reality show don't behave like real people would in a real situation. And like when we think something is authentic that we watch, how does that affect how we behave in our lives after seeing that thing? Anyway. I just think it was... there was so much possibility here, and missed opportunities left and right.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Luke, I have a bigger point though, and this is a bit of a theory.
Okay.
So the government definitely knows about this forest, right?
Yeah.
The Irish government knows about this forest.
They've got to.
And so they've got a bunch of people disappearing. She was using like Google Maps to get her there, so for sure they're accessing that maps data and being like, all these people keep going off the map here and then going missing. So they definitely know
the forest is huge in the movie.
Massive. People are disappearing there. And Luke, you know where this scientist, you know where this professor got the money to do this research, right?
Ooh. Okay, you're saying he did have a proposal that got funded.
He got a grant funded. Yep.
Okay.
And I think also, you know, government loves putting up signs telling people stuff. I think the government put up these like point of no return signs, because otherwise, like, the professor's not doing that. Why would the professor do that?
Yeah.
He's staying there. That's his vibe.
Right.
Luke, do you know why the government is funding this research? Because I've cracked it, I think, and I'm curious if you've got an idea.
I haven't thought about it. I mean, other than just the like implications of having people that can shapeshift.
Yes, Luke. And what? How might that be helpful for them?
I'm thinking spycraft.
Luke, this is exactly it. Because think about how hard it would be for the Irish government to send spies to other countries. A bunch of like freckly, white, pasty, red-haired people trying to infiltrate other governments being like, oh boy, O'Shaughnessy, where are we going? Where's the Guinness? Sorry, my Irish accent is terrible. But like what? You're not spying on anyone if you're an Irish person. You can't do it. It's not possible.
True.
So you have to create... You have to get a new weapon. You have to get a super spy.
Okay. Okay. I like it. Yeah. It's maybe not the most well thought out because then you also just introduce super spies to the whole world.
Right. But that's why they have this whole enterprise here is because Madeline's now like loyal to Irish citizens.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so you send in a bunch of Irish folk, a bunch of sad Irish folk to the forest. And
oh, so everything has actually gone according to plan.
Yeah, this is all part of the plan.
Okay.
And then you get out those loyal fairies that will help you on your spy missions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm here for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And don't have an accent for some reason.
Well, they can now mimic everybody's voices and everything too. So,
yeah.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay.
So that's what they're doing here.
Yeah. That also explains why when she gets back to the university and she goes and checks out his work, they've left his sick ass office. The greatest office I've ever seen.
This to me was the most unrealistic part of the whole movie, Luke.
Yeah.
Is that this professor of history of mythological creatures has multiple windows in his office and wood paneling, high ceilings.
Yes. And I think he has multiple rooms, actually. He has like a back room.
Yes. They kept his stuff untouched in this prime real estate for years.
Insane.
Tell me the government isn't doing this. Tell me this is not the government, okay? It has to be. Because otherwise, this is the most unrealistic part. Even
that
more unrealistic
office gets
than,
snapped up within hours.
Right. He doesn't come in at 8 a.m. on Monday and people are like, oh, must be dead. I'll take his office.
Yeah. I had this down immediately.
It's even more unrealistic than the like building of a bunker.
Yeah.
With like 13 people. God, the movie explanation was even worse, Luke.
Which the bunker is enormous, it's by the way.
A massive bunker. It's got so much like infrastructure there.
The movie doesn't even gesture at making this realistic. Doesn't even try.
No,
to do that. I think they're just like, no, he's got this cool bump. It's really nice down there.
Yep. Yep.
can I do another? Well, okay. So kind of early when Mina's introduced, or actually I think it might be a little bit later. Madeline tells them the rules.
Yes.
And one of them is to not turn your back on the glass.
Yes.
Which they proceed to constantly turn their back on the glass for the rest of the movie. And Madeline's like correctly a big stickler for the rules.
Yeah.
And I think actually the thing about them breaking the rules.
Yeah.
Actually goes well for why the watchers like kind of go crazy. I think it works a little bit better than in the books when they're just like, they get really mad because they left and came back or something like that. I think mm-hmm. emphasizing the rules was nice. It's just like, why did you turn your back on the window if they were just going to do it all the time.
Right. If Mina in the like literally second night was going to walk up to the window, touch it, and then turn her back and lay down with her back facing the window.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get that part. Okay. What were your thoughts on the aesthetics of the Watchers?
Ooh. I liked, okay, there was one scene that I really liked with the Watchers, and that was the scene where...
Wait, can I guess?
Yes.
Actually, I think there were two scenes that I liked with the Watchers. The one that I liked best was the aesthetics when they were talking about when it was trying to look like Madeline,
and it wasn't quite there. Oh, okay, okay.
I thought that was good. And then also when they were... when they got locked out.
Yes, this is the one.
And they were under the trunk and one of the Watchers like crawls past them.
Yes.
And you get like kind of a bad look at it. And then it like stands up and looks really terrifying. Yep. I quite like that actually.
That was what I wanted for the Watchers to be the whole time, is that like scene where they're in the tree and then it stands up and it's just like silhouetted with the light. So good. So good. Yes. And I was honestly really disappointed in Daniel's death scene because I thought it, like, the book's description was so creepy of a bunch of these things, like the way that they're like insect-like, they've got these really long, like, it would have been so much scarier instead of the like classic movie death scene where it like rips his throat out, where like one of them is the evil one that rips his throat out and is like their nemesis from now on or whatever. Instead of that, like, I wanted them to be more like insects, like less dramatic about it, you know? Like, it felt like that was, it was going for high drama when it like ripped his throat open, and I don't want that. Like, it was way scarier when they were like pushing and prodding him around, like playing with him as these inhuman sort of creatures.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the scene with Daniel was really weak, because also they also have a bunch of like Johns coming out that are like naked, and it's like, this looks silly.
Yeah, very silly.
So I think that part was a little silly more so than creepy. I think my take on it is that the aesthetics that we already talked about of the like first introduction that we first see the Watcher was really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked that to kind of be the last time that we saw a Watcher, honestly. Cause I, other than maybe if they redid the Daniel scene a little bit differently, but my take is that we actually see the Watchers a little bit too much after this.
Ooh, I think I agree with you. Actually, I think you're right. And I think they could have done, especially with the Daniel scene, you know, working with like a full moon, working with like silhouettes of these things could have been really effective here. And not giving us, we don't need a lot of detail because we can project our own fears onto these shadows of the Watchers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally agree with you here, actually. And it felt like just sort of a generic movie in some ways because of this, like when they would show a quick cut of the Watchers like running over each other and running towards them, it was like, you didn't need to show that, we knew they were coming.
And again, I think the each time you show them, they become a little bit less alien and scary. And so I think cutting down on the times that we actually see them, especially because like the idea at the beginning is that you're not supposed to see them.
Right And I think, too, something the movie struggled with was showing the, like, consequences of their rage. Because in the book, when they get mad, they, like, tear up the forest in a really crazy way. There's, like, trees that have been gashed and, like, knocked over and, like, claw marks in the concrete around the building. And it's, like, you don't see them do it, but you see, like, crazy damage from
them. Yeah, they do destroy the building.
At the very end.
It's yeah, at the very end, but it's really not emphasized. I agree.
Yeah.
What do you
think about the addition of this like extra lore about the fairies?
I think I'm not about it. I'm definitely anti here. I think again, I keep coming back to this idea that like it's scarier and better if we know less about them.
Yes.
I think.
If they're more animal, it's more scary to me.
Yeah. And like having this lore background, for one thing, takes me a little bit out of like this being closer to our world and more being like, oh, this is just like a fantasy story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, oh, however many years ago we actually were like ruled by these fairy beings. And there's, I don't know. It's like, okay, well this no longer is like a creepy story about my world. This is now like a completely different thing.
Yeah, it took us from horror to fantasy.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know, just I don't want to know about them. It increases my familiarity a little bit and makes them again less scary. Do you agree?
I agree with you here, and I also think again, it feels like the movie could have done like an interesting take about audience and performer here if Madeline wasn't like a special one, but she was just like a representation of like that they do think that they are people, like in a way, right? Like that not all of them are, they aren't just like a faceless mob, like they are individuals within that mob. And if Madeline had, instead of being like, oh, I've got human blood in me, if instead she was like, yeah, you know what, we're friends actually, so I don't want to kill you.
You mean like if her decision to like at the end here, yeah. when Mina is basically like, the reason that you actually kind of liked us is because you're part human.
That felt so bad to me.
Yeah, I agree. The ending was like kind of weird and cheesy, and also like takes away from the fact that like this, it's like the point is not that she's part human. I don't think. It's that like if you live with people for a little while, you're going to grow to care for them in some way, even if they're like very different from you.
And even if they're like, and I think this is part of the power of the book as well in the like emotional side of things. And I didn't even like the book that much, but like Madeline didn't really like Daniel and Sierra very much. Right. Like Madeline was constantly like, these people kind of suck. But even so, she was like fighting to help them make it out. Like she wanted everyone to make it out. And I think it says something about, yeah, what does it mean to be like a part of a group, like a family sort of, or like a community, and like how you sort of form bonds with people, even if you don't really like them that much. And it's not because you have human blood in you. It's because there's like something about working with people to overcome challenge and adversity. Which is a powerful message for people to read. It's an important one for people to read, I think. Not, hey, you have human blood in you, and if your blood isn't pure, well, I guess you just aren't one of us. That's not maybe so great of a message to have these days.
Right. Yeah. I hadn't thought about taking it to that conclusion, but you're right. Yeah. Yeah. I thought the ending was kind of, I don't know, cheesy and in a bad way because of that. Like, I don't know, kind of reveal. I also, okay. But the ending whole scene where in the book, I really liked the part about them coming to Sierra's house and there being the very scary part of it.
Yeah.
The thing that they changed, one thing that I actually liked.
I agree here. And this, we talked about this in the book.
Which is to make Madeline get there first.
Yes. And pretend that she is Sierra.
It was, that was cool. That was good. I liked it.
I agree. And it's exactly what we were talking about from the book too.
Yeah.
So at least they saw that. Good job.
Yeah.
Filmmakers.
Good, good stuff there. Do you have anything else for this scene?
No, not really.
Okay. I have one last critique, and it's a small thing.
Yeah.
At the very end,
mm-hmm.
Sorry, not Sierra. Mina mm-hmm. has kind of reconvened with her sister.
Yeah.
And they make her sister a twin.
An identical twin.
Which is like such a stupid choice.
Agreed.
Because it's like, this is a movie about shapeshifters.
Yeah.
Like, what? This just confuses the thing.
Yeah.
A lot. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand why you would make her. There's no point in making her an identical twin other than just being like, this is confusing.
And this is, again, where I think that the movie wants to say bigger things, but it just doesn't. Because when you make it an identical twin, yes, you're like calling back to what the shapeshifters were doing, right? You're being like, hey, look, she looks like her too. And every time she was staring in the mirror, like she was looking at what could be her, or it could be a person that looks like her, or it could be a watcher. Like, we don't know the levels to it. But the fact that they put it in the last 10 seconds and they don't reference it anywhere else is like, what do you want us to take away from the fact that she had an identical twin? Like, what are you trying to say about it rather than just say that it is there? Then show us it. Like, you need to make a statement about it rather than just show us that she has an identical twin. I get that maybe it's related to like her wearing a brown wig earlier. Like, she wants to transform herself when she goes to date people because she doesn't want to be, you know, she doesn't even want to look like herself anymore. But she could have done that without an identical twin. She could have done that as just a person.
Like, and to me, it honestly almost felt like they accidentally made her an identical twin. Because, like, I don't know.
Yes. 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 Somebody had a good thought, but they didn't carry it beyond that thought.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any more notes about the?
Those are all the notes we that I have about the movie. Can we give quick reviews of the movie?
Yeah. Yeah. You go first.
So I didn't like the book. I like the movie even less. pretty bad film in my opinion. I thought there were some cool scenes.
Yeah.
But overall, the acting was not good. The writing was bad. The changes they made to the story were for the most part bad. Not good.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I like the book more than you. Pretty disappointed by the movie. Like you said, a lot of cool scenes, but overall, honestly, I think the biggest qualm is just like the, how we talked about the passage of time is not portrayed well. Like, there were a lot of things that I had issues with, but I think that's the biggest one, where it was just like, it kind of changed the story to be, again, less of an ordeal that they overcame and more just like, hey, these are some scary monsters.
Yeah.
Okay. That concludes our spook season.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
Happy Halloween. Make sure that you've got those bones out. But okay, we're changing it up. Next week we're returning to a series that we've started. So we're going back to Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure, if you haven't already, make sure you've read the first book. Very fun read. And you can You can read it quickly and listen to what we talked about last time. But next week we'll be starting book two.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't know the title of book two, but it's Dungeon Crawler Coral book two. By Matt Dinneman, and we're going to be doing it. I think we're going to be doing it in two episodes. So read the first half.
Yeah. First half of Doomsday Scenario. Carl's Doomsday Scenario. In book two, Dungeon Crawler Carl. We'll be back next week bringing the hot takes
and being dumb nerds.